This episode of Rob's the Podcast is sponsored by our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and I bet it can be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy, and it's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com and get a quote to see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who never gets any of the style points. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And today I'm going to be taking your feedback questions with a great Survivor guest. Got somebody really knowledgeable to talk about Survivor with here today. Peridium, of course, the great YouTuber, has an amazing YouTube channel talking about all sorts of Survivor and Big Brother subjects, makes new videos every single week. Just an amazing catalog of work that he's done over the years. So very excited to catch up with Peridium and talk about episode number 3 of Survivor 41 here with you today. It's been a great week of podcasting. Last night, I added to the list. I spoke with Gandia Johnson. That podcast is up. I don't always talk to two survivors in a 1 week, but I think I'm going to do more of that this season because there's just so many great guests to talk to. I've been really looking forward to talking with Gandia this week. That podcast was so much fun. I know that you probably are overloaded with the Survivor podcast, but I really recommend you check out the Gandia podcast. Plus, the recap I did with T-Bird, I'll never forget the amazing introduction she gave me this week, not to mention the exit interview with Brad. Plus, still to come, our Survivor 41 Q&A. David Bloomberg will join me Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific for the patrons of Rob's Podcast. You can get access to join us at robiswebsite.com/patron. In addition, for the patrons of Rob's Podcast, we also drop the feedback shows as soon as they get recorded. If you are listening to this in the main feed, you got it on Sunday night. So if you ever want to check out early access to the feedback show, that's another benefit you get of becoming a patron of Rob's Podcast. Before we get to Peridium, of course, you can catch the video of this episode on our YouTube channel at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. Got to thank a sponsor for the podcast today. Those are our friends over at Helix Sleep. Of course, as a Survivor player, you know just how important it is to get a good night's sleep. I'm sure everybody out there listening knows what it's like when you have not gotten a great night's sleep or slept on a mattress that was not so hot. Of course, I recently got a Helix mattress to sleep on, and we've had it for the last few months, and it has really been a game changer for us because that, look, the First Lady of Podcasting is very particular about the mattress that we sleep on, and Helix is the best one that we've had because Helix takes the time to get to know you, because Helix Sleep starts with a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preference to the perfect mattress for you. Why would you buy a mattress that was made for somebody else with Helix? It's a new era. You're getting a mattress that you know will be perfect for the way that you sleep. Everybody's unique. Helix knows that. They have a lot of different types of mattress models to choose from. Soft, medium, firm mattresses, great for cooling you down if you sleep hot. Mattresses that are great for spinal alignment to prevent morning aches and pains. And even a Helix Plus mattress for plus size sleepers. So Nicole and I took the quiz. You put our names in. You tell them how you sleep. I'm a side sleeper. The First Lady of Podcasting flops around like a fish all night. We ended up going with a medium mattress. Of course, I got the Helix Midnight. Could not recommend it enough. Take the quiz yourself and find out what kind of mattress you should be sleeping on. If you are looking for a mattress, just take the quiz. Order the mattress you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't even need to go to the mattress store ever again. It's awesome. You don't need to take my word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress of 2020 by GQ and Wired magazine and has been recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Just go to helixsleep.com/RHAP. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz. They'll match you to a customized mattress to give you the best sleep of your life. They've got a 10-year warranty. You can try it out for 100 nights. That is 4 Survivor seasons, risk-free. They'll even pick it up if you don't love it. You will. Helix has financing options and flexible payment plans, too, so a great night's sleep is never far away. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners at helixsleep.com/RHAP. That's helixsleep.com/RHAP. All right. I'm very excited to bring in this week's guest for the feedback show, of course, that he is a legendary YouTuber. If you are a Survivor fan, of course, he has great breakdowns about all sorts of Survivor subjects, Big Brother subjects, and more. Please welcome the great Peridium to talk today. Peridium, how are you?
Rob. I'm good. It's been 2.5 years. I'm excited to be here. I'm really happy to be here. It's a good time.
Yeah, I'm glad that we were able to do this here for season 41. I mean, I will say, in fairness, there was a whole year where we didn't have any new Survivor to talk about.
Oh yeah, no, it's totally cool. Not having Survivor around, it's been quiet. I've spent a lot of my time playing Among Us.
Yes.
With the RHAP network. Mm-hmm. So that's been keeping my my microphone turned on and my video occasionally turned on. So yeah, no, I'm totally cool. No big deal. Last time we spoke, we were just hearing about Winners at War behind the scenes. And here we are like a year after the season's already done. It's time flies.
Peridium, you're a fixture on Puya's Among Us games. Who's the best Among Us player in all of the RHAP podcasters?
You know, that's a good question. I think it depends on the role because you can play as the good guys or the bad guys. I think when it comes to the good guys,
who are the bad guys?
I'm going to say for the good guys team, I usually, if I'm a bad guy, who do I fear the most? And I'm going to be honest, it's probably Taren.
Yeah.
He's very good at just sort of reading voices and occasionally body language, even in the game. When it comes to being the bad guy, I think I'm going to give it to like the players who tend to win the most. I fear the most the people I do not see coming. And I usually will say that's either Jenny Autumn, or maybe Lavina. Those two. Those are the two I don't see coming.
I'm thinking now, how do you think Penner would do at Among Us?
I'd like to know. That's a good question.
Imposter.
I'd be living for just somebody.
I was in electrical, and you know it.
Call him out and just, I want his reaction.
I was
to,
doing the task.
Of course.
The leaves and the credit card.
Like, my ass.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. I'd be interested in hearing Penner go toe-to-toe with some people in the RHCP network talking about whether he was in electrical or not. I don't know. I love it, though. It'd be funny. I've seen a couple of Among Us. I've seen some Big Brother players play it. They're pretty entertaining at times. Mm-hmm. I've seen some Survivors play it a couple of times. I know Tyson played it at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's been my off season.
Yeah, and pretty for anybody who is unfamiliar with what you do, could you tell people in your own words a little bit of what you're focused on your YouTube channel?
Yeah, so I talk about this little show we all know about, Survivor. Mm-hmm. I have been doing it now. Actually, as of this week, this is going to be my 4th year anniversary this week. I started it in October 17th of 2017.
Oh.
It's wild. And so for the last 4 years, I've been making at least one new video about Survivor, or if Big Brother's on, I talk about Big Brother every single week. One new video. That's the bar I set myself at a long time ago, and I've been living up to it. It's been like that for 4 straight years. Every week, Wednesdays, a new video goes out about something either related to the latest season or something random, like Squid Game.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Well,
so
I love what you do, because I feel like that you are not like beholden to the format of, okay, well, this is the recap of what happened, where, you know, you take something that happened on the show and then you have to come up with like an idea that is like somehow connected, but it is not just like the same thing week in and week out. And I feel like that that is something that I think is probably a great challenge. And I really, you know, admire your creativity to be able to do that week in and week out.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's I spend a lot of time like brainstorming random stuff and thinking about kooky, weird ideas that come out of left field, or ideas that I'm like, this is just something that I've never talked about, but probably I know it would like generate a lot of interest, or it's spur of the moment. And it's like, I watched Squid Game last week and I just was like, this is weird. And I think I could relate this to Survivor. And I was going to bed one night and all of a sudden I woke up and I just said, like, I have an idea for a random video. Who are the Survivor players that would crush this Netflix show that's all the rage right now? And all of a sudden, yeah, so it's just been a lot of brainstorming. I try to flesh out like my schedule for like the next 3 months of like, I started out with, I have a long master list of ideas that are still in my inbox of pre the very first video in 2017 that I never got around to. Like the first video I ever started trying to work on was trying to randomly like rank the states, the best states in Survivor, how they performed. And I don't think I've ever, ever
How's
once
Wyoming doing?
You know, I think it was not on the board at the time. and after this week, it, I guess, is probably still not doing a great job, but characterization, I loved it. I would like to visit it maybe just to see what they're like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that, again, what you do, it's a, such a, you know, great companion piece to, you know, with the kind of stuff that we're, doing on the podcast. And I really admire how you are able to take a subject that I think would take, me and Mike Bloom 3 hours to do in a podcast and do it in like 16 minutes in a video. So, incredible work that Peridium is doing over on YouTube. Let's talk a little bit about, this, season of Survivor first. Of course, that as we've heard many times on Survivor,
it's a new era.
Oh, sorry, that's Brad with a very excited delivery of the new era of Survivor. What are you making of Survivor 41 through 4 hours of show?
Yes, I have enjoyed it. I'm generally more of a cup half full person, so I will look for the good even if there's things that I'm not always in love with. And I'm never fully in love with everything that goes down, but when it comes to this season, I was over the moon about the premiere episode. I had a great time watching that. I wish every episode could be 2 hours or something like that, because I felt like that really gave us a good idea of the breadth of the entire cast and the direction the show's going. And I'm a big fan of strategy. So like seeing new gameplay elements pop up, which to me feels, I wouldn't say it's a watershed moment in the show's history, but we're seeing like the direction the show's going with the strategy focus. And I'm okay with that. I think though I have some questions to talk about in relation to how it's gonna manifest in the episodes going forward and what that's gonna look like for this season, for next season, and maybe the future. But ultimately, I'm pretty good so far through three episodes, and I think most generally I get a good tempo after a couple of episodes of how I'm gonna feel about the season. I think this is gonna be a decent season at the very least. I don't think, unless something crazy blindsides us at the last second that I'm not a fan of, I'm enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to it every week still. So
I think it's interesting to take a look at, you know, they had this super long layoff of, you know, that they filmed the Survivor Winners at War, I think finished filming what in the summer of 2019. And then they filmed this season earlier this year. So almost like 2 years of layoff in between when they finished filming season 40 till now. What has struck you on the terms of the things that they came back after 2 years and have been like really focused on? Okay, this is where we want to go with this show as we enter this new era of Survivor.
I think the biggest thing that struck me was how Jeff is really trying to make it more of a family show. in a weird, and the presentation of it is like the game within the game, which doesn't really bother me because it's so minor, but it's an interesting idea. And I'm like going onto the website that he's pitching and listening to his 30-second things.
Can I just say real quick that, by the way, like I introduced the game within the game to my kids and they were both like super into the game within the game. So
were
like,
they? Okay.
I don't know how much like Survivor is trying to target like 8-year-olds and kids in that generation to be watching Survivor, because I feel like a lot of times they talk about things on this show that are not necessarily suited for that particular age group, but they were very into the game within the game.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't have kids, and so I watched it and then I went on, did this word scramble, and it was like NRU, and I was like, or it was actually, one of them was OTEV.
Yeah,
but it was veto, but it wasn't either. It was actually vote.
Yeah, can I just explain? So if you haven't done the game within the game, you solve the Rebus puzzle. That's what they do in the show. And then Jeff comes on and he's in like this very weird, like Dharma initiative jumpsuit. And he's like, all right, great. You just solved the puzzle. Okay, just imagine that I'm like in your head and I'm standing behind you. And now, okay, now you're going to unscramble the words. And that I have to say that first off, this was super hard. I think it was maybe for this one. So yeah, so they give you the letters like N-R-U. And my kids are like, Dad, so easy. Run. That's it. And then they hit the button. And then they're like, Dad, I don't understand. It's run. Run is the word. Run is the word. And then like I realize, like, no, it's earn. Like kids don't know what an earn is.
Sure. Makes them think like, wait, this is Survivor related. What's the word Survivor related? Like,
right.
Yeah.
I agree. Bit like it's broken. Doesn't work. Run. You run on Survivor.
You have to solve the Rebus puzzle, and then it allows you to go to part two, which is the word scramble.
Yeah.
It's an interesting take. I've never
and then Jeff,
seen the show.
Gives you like a super like specific, all right, now I'm going to put you in it. I'm going to tell you about something that's coming up next week. Okay. There's going to be imagine there's a boat and the boat comes and then you get in the boat, but then you tell everybody that I think that part is going like a little bit over the kids' heads where they like, I can barely follow the whole like hypothetical situation.
Yeah. I haven't really listened to Jeff as much. I'm just there to do the word scramble and call it a day. I'm hoping I get something at the end. What if I do all of them? But, mm-hmm. We'll see. Get an invitation to the finale. It's pre-taped. Never mind. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. So that struck me as interesting.
Yeah.
We'll hop in the Zoom call. Mm-hmm. There's a heavy, an even heavier focus on the advantages and like incorporating that. I feel like Jeff has talked about this monster and it's becoming clear. Like, I wonder, like, I think in some weird way, I think Jeff is the monster in a strange way. Jeff's big brain is the monster. He's, I see these beware advantages, the summit, I'm like, this is definitely all Jeff. I can see it, can feel it. And I'm okay. I actually really appreciate Jeff's, passion and drive to just keep the show bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, there's the question of if it isn't broke, don't fix it. Is it breaking now? I don't know. But either way, like seeing all that happen is definitely a new direction for the show. And I'm interested to see where it culminates with the numerous extra votes, the vote steals, the just like the sky's the limit right now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
that's like, yeah, the 2 years off, it feels like Jeff is like, all right, break the fourth wall. He's like the Kool-Aid man breaking the fourth wall out of the jungle.
Like Rick
That's
Evans,
the first thing. A little bit. That was what surprised me initially. I haven't seen too many fourth wall breaks that are like so egregious like they were in the premiere where they were very noticeable.
Yeah, he really just did it there. And then also before Tribal Council. And then we didn't even get that one from, he didn't do it at all in week 3.
Yeah. And then I think another huge thing is the editing and the backstories.
Yeah.
Taking a page out of, I guess, Australian Survivor. Mm-hmm. And like having it, and maybe that's even, I don't watch much reality beyond Survivor or the international versions or Big Brother in the international version. So I don't know. I've heard that other shows have done this. This is a pretty common thing in reality TV. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know that much about it. I've never really been against it. So watching it on Australian Survivor, how they will sort of pull you out of the island and into like this person's apartment or whatever. They used to kind of do this like old school where they would show us clips of the person like randomly standing in their office or something. Yes. I don't know if they did that for you in the Amazon.
So it didn't make the air, but we did film that. Like they're like, okay, let's film you in front of the sign for your town. And they like took me to okay, now let's take you to your office and film you. There was like, they sent like two guys to my house to film like a bunch of B-roll, but they didn't end up using it. But that this was something that, I haven't had a chance to talk about on the podcast, where the Australian Survivor, what I noticed, and I got to talk with Shannon Guss, of course, who is the, world's biggest Survivor fan, does a great job covering all of the international Survivor seasons for Rob's podcast, and also covering the current Survivor season on Survivor Global. That when I watch that, I love how they do it in Australian Survivor. I think I noticed like a little bit of a shift between what they do in Australian Survivor with the flashbacks and what they do here. I feel like that the Australian Survivor focuses on, they do that sort of like intro package, and they are focused on who this person is and what is their superpower. This is a they treat it like it's like the MCU. Let's introduce Peridium and what they don't know about me is like that I like have the ability I can turn straw into gold on YouTube of like taking stuff from all these different shows. And that each person like has like a, they really treat it like this is like my hidden strength that nobody knows that I have, and this is how I'm going to use it to win the game. US Survivor is they've used the flashback to tell you like, this is what I'm playing for. This is not about like, this is like that we don't see anything about like, here's why I will win the game. Here, this is like, this is why I'm on Survivor. This is the trauma. This is the experience I'm pulling from. This is who I'm playing for. But it's more about the why than the Australian Survivor version, which I think is more about that this is how.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. How like, I think Dirty Harry on Australian Survivor had like this whole making up a fake kid strategy and how he was going to implement that and how it was working out for a while. And I thought that was so cool and different. And like, that's what I was hoping to get a little more out of these backstories. I do appreciate that. They are, sometimes it gets a little heavy handed when it's like constantly about their trauma and like the things that they've experienced that have led them today. I do occasionally wish we'd, and I'm thinking like, you know what, look, I'm hoping Survivor goes on for a long time. So if this is just the beginning, then I like hearkening it, drop the four, keep the one or whatever. If this is the beginning of this new editing style and what they choose to do with it, maybe next season or a couple seasons down the line, we'll get more of like that, where they're able to take the backstory and turn it into like a funny bit or talking about how they're going to implement their backstory and like utilize it as a strategy or something or another, as opposed to it simply being like the motivation and the fuel for them, or maybe both, maybe a little bit of both. I think that if I don't mind it at all, I think it's a very good way of like getting to know somebody really quickly in a short period of time, expediting it a little bit, as opposed to like figuring out who they are from like random confessionals throughout episodes. This is like just a dollop of like personal content right then and there. We get to know a lot about them in about 45 seconds. I think that's efficient. I think it's very powerful. And, you know, it's nice to see people's faces of the family that they're playing for. They're playing for a kid. I think that was emphasized last year in Winners at War a lot when Jeff had the family visit, brought in everyone's loved one, seeing the kids and all that really showed us like, this is where the money is going in a way. And like, this is what they're supporting, who they're there for. So yeah, I'm okay with it.
I don't want to say like that the Australian Survivor version is better or worse for, you know, like for, I'm sure for each person, like it hits different. That for me, like just in getting involved in like the strategy of the show, like I loved getting the superpower version of each person, but I can understand that. I think that US Survivor is very much focused on sort of like the journey of the players as opposed to the game itself. And I think that, you know, with all of the advantages and lose a vote and get a vote, like I really think that Survivor doesn't want the viewers to be as concerned about the game. Like I think that what the show they're trying to make is that this is a show about, you know, overcoming adversity and like, don't even worry. Don't even think about like, it's the monster. The monster's chasing you. Just, you know, don't even worry about like, who has what vote and everything that's going on with like the game mechanics. Like, cause I feel like that the way that it's structured, it's like, they don't really want you to care that much about it. It's just more about that who these people are and why they're there and, you know, what they're going to come out as on the other side of this thing.
Yeah. I do think that's a slightly different direction too from previous seasons.
Well, I think it's been going that way for a while. Where I think that's where like, and I think the Edge of Extinction was like another like encapsulation of that. Where the whole point of the Edge of Extinction was like, just, you know, what can people overcome when they like, what are they willing to do to be on Survivor, and what is that journey look like, and let's make them, you know, carry logs up and down the hill just to see if they can do it, and see, you know, what's your story at the end of this whole thing. And so
do you think it started there, or could you trace it even further back?
Suri crossing the beam, I think is like, you know, I just think that the show is like, you know, that I don't want to say that like strategy is out the window, but I do think that, you know, like in the 30s, especially, I think that we've come to a point where, you know, forget heroes versus villains. Survivor is a show about heroes versus heroes. You know, we want, and the show wants you to be rooting
versus
for
hustlers.
Personally, yeah. And forget the hustlers too. they want you to be personally invested in the lives of each and every one of these players and seeing what they do. Even like, I felt like that in the tribal council from this week, JD talked about his experience, and he opened up about how, you know, he looked up to a lot of the players from the past. And so even if he had a short version of his Survivor experience, that he was very grateful to, you know, have gotten the chance to play. And listen to what Jeff says in response to what JD said.
In just 7 days, you've already impacted people just like you were impacted, of all ages, to not fear fear.
To not fear fear. What, that wasn't even what he was. What he said.
Yeah, it reminded me a little of David from Millennials Gen X a little with that.
Yeah,
I felt like he was talking to the wrong player. But yeah.
But I think that the show, fear, fear. And I think that what you know Jeff wants to give you is that this is a show about people facing adversity, going into a, you know, this very tough, dire situation and persevering through it, not giving up. And that it's sort of like the message of the show is, you know, you too can, you know, accomplish anything through, you know, following the lives of like, watch how these people are doing it.
Yeah.
And this is why they're doing it.
I think we've had nuggets of that leading up to this, the made more emphasis on it going, now that I'm really thinking about it, going back to say even a season that is very much known for how strategy heavy it is in Cambodia, but seeing how a lot of the success stories in that were about Spencer's growth arc, finding love, the ability to love, or seeing Jeremy playing for his family and his wife. And that was a very predominant like focus, like even to this day, people still are like, oh yeah, if it was that sob story, that's what people remember, they take from it. But it really wasn't. It was just a part of the motivation for why Jeremy was doing what he was, part of his strategy. You look at Adam Klein in Millennials Gen X with his story being such a focal point, or David and his fear of fear a little bit. He's afraid of dying, and that became such a strong. And then, of course, you mentioned Suri and the balance beam. So, yeah, this has been sort of a recurring thing that's, I think, with the Edge, and that's a good point with the Edge of Extinction. And I do think that was one of the biggest seasons I noticed from an editing perspective, because I do look at that a lot. I think that's one of the most, I don't know if I want to say it was like it's just, it was very different how they edited the Edge to pair compared to how they usually edit. And in really the whole season as a whole, I've used that season. I've made videos talking about editing techniques and narrative storytelling that the show has changed up in the last few seasons. And I really think The Edge of Extinction was like the first season to really go all out with it. And that's it, both on the edge and off of it. And I was excited to see that because a lot of Survivor starts to feel the same. The more you watch it, you go further back. They all tend to feel the exact same way. They're edited the same way. It's really switched up. And then also this now using the backstories and emphasizing that the why of how every player is there for. And we really know, like, at this point, I think at least half the cast still in the game has those flashbacks. A couple of players have had multiple. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of changed the viewing experience a little bit. Whether we know it or not, it's been slowly building up to it. It's been more and more emphasized. So I'm curious to see what they're... I'm actually, like, I really am positive about that. I'm curious to see where they go with that and how they take advantage of it to tell the story of the players. If that's... Jeff has said that he wants to make the seasons more about the people and less about these themes or the forced mm-hmm. casting that they've been doing. Like, here's a David tribe. What does that mean? Here's the millennial tribe. What does it mean to be a millennial and how you text your mom or whatever? Mm-hmm. That's a little bit forced. And I think people roll their eyes. Whereas, like, you know what? We're not going to force it. Maybe we'll let the people show up and we cast them for a reason. So let those reasons come out instead of, you know? So, yeah.
It's hard. It's like a double-edged sword. And, you know, I'm trying to, like, spin this in a positive way because I feel like that people are, you know, very focused on, like, hey, we watch Survivor for the characters. We want to see the characters. Stop so much with all of the, you know, Fugazi extra vote and, you know, stop with all this extra stuff. But at the same time, you know, the show is, like, very focused on, like, giving you the, like, sort of, like, arc of these characters in terms of, like, their lives and, you know, their purpose on the show. So I do feel like they are trying to, you know, highlight the players. But I think that, you know, because that's sort of, like, the theme of the season and the mm-hmm. theme of the show is, you know, giving you this, like, this arc of, like, the personal growth of our characters and what they're overcoming, that I think it can feel a little bit forced.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of a slight, I would say, if I was really trying to dig into it, be an armchair analyst, which is what I am anyway, mm-hmm. but is, like, there's somewhat of an identity, I wouldn't say identity crisis, but it feels something similar to that, where they have so much emphasis both on the how of, or the why of these people and who they are. And that Jeff wants the seasons to play out like who they cast and let the cast define the season. But then also it feels like it was most relevant for this episode, the episode 3. But like every scene was not about the people as much as it was about the game and the parchment. The paper, the beware advantages, we saw three of them come out this mm-hmm. episode. We saw the steal a vote talk about, we saw them go to the summit island, spooky summit island, which, to be fair, I want to say that, again, I go back to, like, the positive too, where there's actually a lot of personal content that comes out in the cracks or leads up to these advantages popping out. I've rewatched the episode now twice, taken a lot of notes. And I've seen a lot of commentary where a lot of fans have been very upset about how many advantages there are. It's very complicated, very confusing. And I do wonder if the overall sentiment between, like, there's a heavy focus on who these people are and their backstories, but then also, like, we're not really seeing a lot of them sometimes, it feels like, because it's mm-hmm. all in relation. The conversation seems to be circulating around less about how these people feel about each other and more about how they feel about the advantages and what that means for each person. I don't know. How do you feel about all that? That's a lot.
I just come to terms with the fact that, like, I think that the show doesn't want you to think that much about all of the, you know, idols and advantages. I think that they feel like, okay, just come with us on this ride. Just don't worry about it. And I know that, hey, like, the people that, like, listen to these podcasts are, hey, like, no, we're the super fans. We want to know, like, okay, what happens if this? Because we're going to think about it all week long. And what happens if this? What happens if this? And I think that Jeff is like, hey, don't worry about it. Like, how did you even figure out that 1 in 6 is 16%? Like, why are you thinking about this so much? Just feel the show. Like, don't think so much about the show.
Mm. I do think that somewhat worked out. Like, I was talking to my family last night. They're very casual about all that, but they watch it. They watch it because they know I love it, and they've gotten to enjoy it too. It's not The Bachelor. My sister likes The Bachelor, but you know, it's decent. They have a decent success rate of showmances, I think. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's Big Brother. She watched Big Brother too. But I was asking them, just giving me their, you know, just give me your ballpark spitball.
What did they say?
What do they think? My mom was the first to talk, and she actually said she wasn't all that confused about the advantages. Because of what you said, she's kind of just feeling her way through the episode, isn't thinking a ton about it. She understands what's going on, but it's a lot. She isn't fully, like, if I press her on it, she probably couldn't go too deep into the complications of the vote. But, you know, she was like, oh, that Brad guy was trusting that Shan, and that was such a bad call. And, you know, but she generally got the gist of it. I talked to my mom, my sister, my brother-in-law, and all three of them were pretty okay with the overall advantages and all that. My brother-in-law did want to be like, I do wish there was more talk about the people, and we got to know them more. He's like, I've watched all, he's binged a lot of Survivor. He became a recent fan, and so he's seen how the evolution is charted. And he's like, you know, I do kind of miss those moments of the camp with the people more, and it's like more jokey, and there's not like parchment and Beware advantages. But he's like, I don't mind it. It's not that big a deal. Mm-hmm. So that was the casual for my family, from my anecdotal tiny experience of asking them, asking the people on the street. They seem to be okay with it for the most part. Yeah. So I didn't have as strong of a reaction as I might, or as I've seen by a lot of super fans.
I know. And we're in our bubble of like that. We want to know exactly how this, wait, hold on. You know, that like, could you split the vote? Could you do this? Could you like, what could you play that other thing? Where I think that for the show, and the show I think is doing well. It beat The Masked Singer for the first time in the ratings this week. I think that the millions and millions of people watch this show. And I think that the Survivor's like, look, we're just going to crystallize it. It's either Brad is going home. I don't mean to bring up crystals like JD. Either Brad is going home or JD is going home. Like, for the audience, it's like they get to tribal council. It's like going to be either a binary choice. Either it's Brad's name is going to come up or JD's name is going to come up. And they're not really going to think too much about the mechanics of like how that ultimately is going to come to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's much more of like an amusement park ride almost, and you're just here for the ride. You're experiencing. You're in the boat. You're literally point of view is the boat pulling up to the spooky beach, and we're here for the ride. What's going to happen? I have no idea.
Where it's sort of like, you know, and maybe this is like the bad example, but like you know, you go watch like The Avengers, and you know, where did Tony Stark get this money from? How is he doing this? Like, what happened to in this? Or like Doctor Strange is gonna split the universe, like, hold on, what? And you know, if you just go along for that ride and aren't really questioning that, you may have a more enjoyable experience.
Also, the secret scenes, I've watched them on the CBS website. They're pretty good. Like, they give me a few 6-10 minutes every week of more stuff, and I'm sad they're not on the actual episode sometimes, but they do flesh out the experience a little more if you're a super fan and you're listening to us.
What's been a favorite of yours?
Oh, for sure. Heather. Heather and the Dream. It was like going full Shambo. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never thought I'd see the Shambo strategy coming back to materialize, but
yeah,
I love that.
One this week, Jeannie caught a clam. And for all those people that are like, we need the camp life, go watch Jeannie catch a clam. Does Jeannie caught a clam? She cooked it. They ate it. They're like, that's pretty good.
Was there a beware advantage in the clam?
No.
But it wasn't. Okay.
Like, you know, I think the people like, we long for camp life. Like, listen, take it from somebody who's lived camp life. Like, you're not missing that much. It's not that exciting.
Yeah, I guess, you know, they cut down by a third of the season. So there's no more camp days of just doing nothing, just sitting around. Everything's go. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, I was curious. I was like, we're going into this new season. It's a third less. I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest, if Survivor stays at 26 days. I don't know for sure. I haven't heard anything.
Yeah.
But I heard that for the first time a while ago. And I thought, I could see that. Like, they don't necessarily, it's like trimming the fat.
Yeah.
To get to the meat and potatoes of the entire experience. I don't know. Maybe we don't need the Jeannie catching the clam to make air, or at least in front of us in the 42-minute package.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that just like big picture in terms of like, you know, if you had a 26 day Survivor season and then you cut 14 days off there, 14 days off the, like on the other side with, you know, the with two seasons in a year, like, does that open the door? Could you film a third Survivor season in a year?
Gosh.
Is that a possibility? But I do feel like that in terms of like budgeting and stuff like that, that's like really matters a lot for like the bottom line and the overall health of the show. Like, I mean, in theory, you're going to be cutting the cost of the show by what, 30%, 33%. So I think it really does help like sort of like the long-term viability of Survivor of the 20, like, honestly, as somebody who's done it, like, you know, 38 days, like you could speed it up. It's you are not going to be losing that much. And I really don't think that as a viewer, it's going to be that, you know, it's going to affect you that much.
And as somebody who hasn't done it, I can't relate.
Yeah.
But
and I think that once we get to the merge, I think that the gameplay is going to be very fast paced. And I think that you're going to have like, you know, like, I don't know what number we're going to merge at, but I don't like the big merges. So I think we're going to get maybe a merge with like 9 or 10 people with like how it used to be, as opposed to like merging at 13 and you get some really boring votes at like, you know, the like, yeah, like 9 to 4, 10 to 3 merge vote. And you know, like we spend a lot of time in the modern day Survivor season dealing with like, the final 12 vote, the final 11 vote. And we're just so far away from the end game. And we spend a lot of the time of the season dealing with these like really big tribes and, figuring out like these first couple of votes of the merge. If we could sort of like get down to brass tacks and we get into a merge where it's a little bit like 9 people, 10 people, 8 people, and spend more time there, I think that, you know, we're going to probably be better served on the TV show.
I mean, I think the way the season's currently panning out in 41, I don't even, yeah, of course, I'm also a big fan of having smaller merges, also smaller juries. I've always been, yes. I think I've noticed that as the juries get bigger, we tend to get more unanimous votes. And it makes sense. There was an article that this guy wrote a while ago. I feel bad. I don't remember who it was. He was on one of the live feed updates a long time ago for Big Brother with Taryn, a really smart guy. And he did a whole almost like dissertation on the changes to modern Big Brother and how they expanded the jury size, and it's resulted in more groupthink and how individual votes mean less. So I think in some level, I've always been a fan of like 16 to 18 player casts. I like having smaller juries. I do kind of prefer the final two, but I don't mind the final three that much. But I do think with 41, it looks like based on the fact that next time on the for episode 4, we're not swapping. So I don't think we're swapping, at least. They didn't hint at it. I feel like they would have. Which means we're not gonna, I don't think we're gonna get a swap, most likely, which means we're gonna either have the merge at 13 or 12, which is totally cool. I'm great with that, with no swap for the first time in a long time. I don't think they've had a no swap season since, I don't even know, Philippines, maybe? It's been a long time.
Yeah, and that was like an absorption. I definitely could see like a Philippine style, like, you know, if Yasa like lost, like, okay, Tiffany and Xander, and they both went out, and then it's like, all right, one tribe gets Evie, one tribe gets Liana, and that's your, you know, that's your swap.
Right. You could, yeah, I could see that happening. And honestly, I like the Philippines. I thought that was a very narrative heavy. I loved the concept of having these two massive underdogs just by default. Just the game created the underdogs. That was like the season. They didn't force that theme. The theme was like these returning players with their medevacs and their second chance or whatever, but it turned into the Matt Singh show in a way, and I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. So I'm like, if it naturally finds that we don't need to swap and there's two underdogs from, say, the Osceola tribe or something, and there's no swap that happens, they get absorbed, I'm okay with that. I like having the three tribe dynamic, smaller tribes. It does pose some complications, I feel. There's some tricky, and this is something my mom pointed out to me, which, you know, she said, like, the losing the vote aspect makes it complicated because there's such small tribes that losing a vote when you're only one of four people seems incredibly harsh. And I'm like, yeah, I agree with that. Like, it's a bit complicated when you have these small tribes. I like the concept of having smaller tribes, slightly smaller cast, maybe even a smaller jury. But I do wonder, with all of the twists and advantages coming into play, if it's jeopardizing what I liked from yesteryear with like the Philippines or with Cagayan. And possibly throwing a wrench into it. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't know. So far, I'm enjoying it, though.
We might still get there. You know, and I think that what was nice about Philippines was it was like an easy season to follow where, you know, you had the story in the beginning was Matt Singh. We were all focused on sort of like Matt Singh going down the tubes. And you had then Malcolm and Denise, and we were sort of like very invested in them. And one went to one tribe and one went to the other tribe. And we followed like Denise's story with with Calibur, and then Malcolm's story over with Tan Dang, and then you know we went into sort of everything else that was going on in that season. I feel like that with no swap, I do think that it makes it more likely that we could get to, something like the Philippines, where I feel like that even though we have really not seen too much of what's going on at Luvu, that I like no swap here because I feel like that we have the chance to really understand the story of these tribes. And then as opposed to when we like swap so early, I think it becomes very confusing in terms of like who's where. And I think we have a better chance to sort of like lose the stories of people that aren't like the main focus of the show.
Yes, it gets very discombobulated, especially when they do it after like one or two episodes. It's happened a lot in the last 10 seasons or so. I've never been a big fan of that. I say like one swap is enough. I'm honestly okay sometimes with no swaps. I think mixing it up is great. I like that they have gone to the three tribes. They haven't done three tribes out of the gate since I think Heroes Hustlers. Yeah. And so I was like, you know what? I'm okay with this. And the lack of a swap makes it actually more interesting. Yeah. I actually like it more. I would go this route more often because it focuses more on, I can keep track of the people and the storylines on each tribe. And it's a small tribe. It's a small number. And when they emphasize like the backstories of these people, I have a pretty decent understanding of who most of these people are in this cast. I can't say the same for a lot of previous seasons in the last five seasons where pre-merge episode three, whoever gets voted out, I don't really remember much about even in the moment. And that's, I think I prefer to know who these people are. And even if they're going out like Brad going out, I have a great understanding of who Brad was. I enjoyed him quite a lot, you know, for a third boot, for the third episode boot, you know. It's just, I'm okay with the makeup of the season thus far.
Okay. So that was a great setup. I'm glad you ended on Brad because I have a Brad question for you. Okay. This is from Jamie. Has a question for you about Brad.
Hi, Robin Peridium. I just wanted to ask you this question because I'm a big fan of your YouTube channel and specifically your ranking videos. And so I thought it could be fun in light of Brad's glorious but devastating exit from the show in this episode to rank your top five Brad moments.
Okay. Now, Pridium, were you already working on the top five Brad moments of the season?
I won't lie. I thought about doing something related to food and relating players to food, pre-merge players to what's their spirit food or something you want to call it.
Okay.
Like a Kim Spradlin-esque, but no, I haven't done my top five Brad moments yet.
All right. Well, that you mentioned Brad with food. Let me ask you, is this going to be number one?
I was hoping it was the salt water that was making my clothes baggy, but the fact is I'm just turning into a little bit of a twig and it's kind of a fuzzy top. I feel like a broccoli. So broccoli is grows little bunches on small trees. So I feel like a little broccoli tree, I guess.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I was saying I usually take notes on every episode and I usually don't go verbatim. But for that, I had to go verbatim just so I have it.
Because he starts with salt water. Like salt water shrunk my clothes and then I feel like a twig and then a twig and then my hair was like broccoli and I look like broccoli. And
it was an evolution of a analogy before our eyes. They left nothing. They gave us the full Brad. Nothing was left on the cutting room floor. Yeah,
pretty. And then I watched the episode back right before we're recording. And then the thing that stood out to me was that, okay, so, you know, Brad does that whole thing. And immediately, Jeff tries to pivot off of it.
Xander, does that surprise you to have that kind of introspection?
What? Like, he said, like, the wackiest thing ever. And Jeff is like, earnestly, like, wow, Xander, is that interesting to hear that kind of introspection? Like, what was the introspection? I look like broccoli?
You know, you see Jeff with these these millennials and these other themes he's forced. I wouldn't put it past him to find a way to draw that moment out and be like, let's pivot from there and see if we can get some moment out of it. Xander, what do you have to tell us about? Yeah.
Xander, he earnestly tries to do his thing again. I think if Jeff said that to me as a there, like, Jeff, I got to be honest. I'm not really following where Pratt's going with this.
if Xander, if he went to anyone else, I would have been interested to see what anyone else had to say at that point, just to see their honest thoughts beyond beyond the butterflies. But
yeah, well, we know that Xander did like that because he tells Brad later.
I like what you said about broccoli.
I like what you said about broccoli. Has that sentence ever been said before in the English language? I liked what you said there about broccoli.
No, I can certainly say I don't think it's ever been said in Survivor's history, let alone the English language. It's a new sentence.
Okay. Can we come up with the five greatest Brad moments? Okay, so there's definitely broccoli.
I mean, yes, broccoli moment, probably number one, most iconic for everything he said. That whole I feel like a little broccoli tree, and then he ends it with the I guess. I live for the last few just the I guess part. Just delivers, puts the period at the end of that, puts the full stop at the end of it. Of course we have to go to him building the fake Brad,
the
dummy Brad on the beach. That was another fantastic moment. Quick, effective. It sounds like it might have worked from his exit interview. I listened to that you had with him a couple days ago.
You know what? And Brad was so great in the exit interview. But like just talking through. Okay, so that he told Shan about his advantages, right? Jeannie had to know. Like, there's no chance like Shan didn't also tell Ricard, like, hey, this is what Brad's doing tonight. And then did JD not know? Was it all to just punk JD?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think so. Mm-hmm. Just to make it a little better. Mm-hmm. I do think it was a little extra, but that's okay.
Yeah, we love it.
At the end of
we
the day.
It. Okay.
I'm here for the extra.
So, okay, broccoli, fake bread. What about Brad Spy Shack?
I loved it. Yeah, I was equating it to Tony. I was like, this is it. You know, the last winners left their imprint on the next season. Here's Tony Spy Shack in two episodes already. Brad's channeling his inner Wyoming hunter. It's coming out. He's big buck hunting, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's hiding in the Fijian bush.
Pretty. How about when Brad told Shan and Sarah that he was going to write their names down to their face?
Classic. One of the defining moments of the premiere. We had 120 something minutes, and I think that was a top three moment of the premiere episode when he just straight up tells the two people that I guess he's targeting, at least from our perspective.
Yep.
Yeah, it's one of you two to your face. Who does that? It's crazy. So it's like a new strategy we've never seen.
Yeah. And then what do you have rounding out the top five?
Oh man. I'm trying to think because those are definitely the big four. Do you have a fifth?
Coming out and saying he wants the vote steal.
That's possible. I do like his overall enthusiasm. He had such great enthusiasm. Some of his confessionals just pull me in. I feel the energy.
Yeah, listen to this man, Pridium.
Oh, I'm feeling so excited. My heart's just kind of missing beats and I'm just kind of all wired even though I haven't eaten much.
Yes. I think he has one where he's like just hypes up the advantage he finds at the beginning of this episode three. And I don't know exactly what he was saying, but it's like all the twists, all the danger, high risk. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, it's like he's eating his favorite food or just took broccoli. A bite into like, he's eating his favorite stalk of broccoli or whatever. And he just loves it. And I'm like, maybe that's it. It's just the overall level of he's there for the show. He's there for it. I will miss Brad quite a lot.
How about his slow motion dive off the boat?
Good. Yeah. That was good. Yeah.
So maybe we'll make it a top honorable four mention. Moments for Brad.
I could find a fifth if I spent a little time, but off the top of my head, those are definitely, and those are very like, that's a strong top four for three episodes. Mm-hmm. I mean, like that's competing. That might be more than Tony got in Winners at War for three episodes, possibly.
Yeah, I
probably
mean, not, I mean, but up there. I mean, Tony did. He had the ladder. He caught a shark.
You're right. That's couple, the tricky thing.
A couple of things. You know, that's a high bar, Tony.
But that's to be fair. He's pushing up into Tony levels as far as three episodes of and engaging random content. Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. John Tinkham sent us in a question. He wants to know, what would your pitch to a movie studio be for Brad Reese's Day Off be? Now, I know you are a student of all things cinema. Do you have an idea for what would happen in the movie Brad Reese's Day Off?
Okay. So it would have to be this Wyoming rancher. Is this relating it to Survivor? Is the pitch like he's on his crazy? He's a man living on his own in the like Castaway almost.
I mean, I think it's going to be like what's our Ferris Bueller idea for you know, with Brad as the protagonist in the film.
Oh wow! Okay, so I have to admit I haven't seen Ferris Bueller in a long time.
Okay,
so I know the reference, but I have not seen it in a long time.
Does he need to call in sick for the ranch to go beyond Survivor?
Possibly he builds a fake dummy Brad in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That yeah. is a stand in on the ranch. Yeah. He has to teach it somehow, train it to hunt in the bush. Maybe that's a lead up the backstory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We get the flashback of that.
Maybe because then it's sort of like that the you know, Brad is such a hardworking rancher. And then when he sort of like sneaks off to go do Survivor, then everybody in his town, they drive by and they're like, hey, I don't see Brad out there. Brad, there must be something wrong. Uh-oh. Hope Brad's not sick. They get the GoFundMe going to try to get like, you know, like we're concerned about Brad. He doesn't miss a day of work.
Yeah.
All of Wyoming is on the lookout now for, you know, raising money for Brad.
And then but meanwhile, through all this, we got dummy Brad, but is real Brad in Fiji? Is that the idea?
I don't know.
Is he off skipping?
He borrowed somebody's car to go drive to casting.
Okay. Okay. I could see it. I like it.
He's going to get in a parade and sing somewhere.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it writes itself.
I would watch it. I would be curious to see what Brad could do. Give him the microphone, give him the camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brad, how is your day off?
Oh, I'm feeling so excited. My heart's just kind of missing beats. And I'm just kind of all wired, even though I haven't eaten much.
Maybe he pops off to Trader Joe's, picks up a thing of his favorite vegetables and
from
we
Genie?
Hear a little bit about that.
Yeah.
From Genie's
working at the store. Like, can mm-hmm. I get a price check on the broccoli?
Like, I like what you said about broccoli.
He likes to put a little bit of salt on top.
That's Xander. He's behind him in the line in the store.
And Xander's mumbling something about butterflies and, and then they all get in the car at the end of it. He picks them up and they go cruising through town. I would watch it.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be great. I'd be
curious.
What'd you think about JD? Have you have any thoughts about JD this season, Peridium?
I've seen some people be mixed on him. I love JD. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of JD. People find him a little bit. I've seen some people find him a little bit like too much. I think my sister was like, oh, he's so sloppy. And I'm like, yeah, I love that. Like it's real. And it feels like he's so exuberant. Like I could only wish to be that sloppy at times. Like I walk around with my advantage sticking out, you know, and then I get called out for it. And, you know, I love his youthful just enjoyment of being a Survivor fan on Survivor.
Can I say something with, you know, we heard this week about how JD, one of his heroes is Wu, which I think is so great because I feel like that, you know, in the super fan community, I don't think we've recognized the greatness of Wu that we talk about. Like, oh,
I'm a huge Wu fan.
What a fool. He took Tony to the end. I've said personally, he's made the biggest mistake in the history of the game where I feel like you open one door, you win the game. You open the other door, you lose the game. He went from a clear win to losing the game to Tony. But it's so nice to hear about JD's love for Wu, who is just one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet in Wu. But I was wondering that in Survivor Kageyan, that Wu's one of his famous moments, and you hear JD talk about it when he's doing his impressions, is when Wu chases down Spencer, where Spencer is out looking for the clue for the idol. And what does Wu do? That he picks up Spencer's pants, and then out of the pants falls the paper. And that's the, and then Wu, that's what he picks up to go Sonic the Hedgehog and go run go off then and do the very impression that JD is doing in this episode of Survivor. That he he should have learned from Survivor Kageyan, be very careful with the paper sticking out of your pants.
It's like poetry in motion. There's a connective tissue here. I'm a big Wu fan, and I know JD said in the preseason he liked Wu. He said he liked Fabio, which was I don't see Fabio mentioned very often. I'm a big fan of Fabio too. I was instantly drawn to JD from the preseason. I had him at number 3 in my preseason picks, as far as ranking the whole cast. And so he's giving me all that I could ask for as far as his journey on the show. And seeing like the whole advantage thing, you compare it to Wu with the idol and the note from Spencer. And now it's the whole role is reversed. That's fantastic. It's poetry. It's like that's a montage I will put together where it's if I have to compare JD to Wu or whatever, I love it. And then we get the reference with the Sonic the Hedgehog style zipping through the jungle. And it's like, you know, technically in this case, JD's the Spencer of the situation. But yeah.
can I play JD's impressions for you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, here's JD's impressions.
Don't say that I gave that to him. Do you think I'm stupid?
That's freaking Reem. I do Wu like all the time. I think.
Okay. First of all, what do you think of the Reem impression?
It didn't remind me of Reem a ton, but I still appreciated him
like
saying
the,
it's freaking
like the
Reem.
Effort. Like the
I
effort. Like
I appreciate the callback. You know.
Yeah.
That's freaking Reem. It's all right.
Yeah. Then we get Wu. I think he does better with Wu than he does with Reem.
So funny. I bust out my arsenal, which is my ninja stealth mode. I'm cruising to the path, Sonic the Hedgehog style. There's no way he's catching me.
So I'll give him
a
better grade, yeah. at least a B on the Wu.
I mean, I've heard you do the Reem impressions for so long that I'm like, it's that. That's the Reem impression for me. But hearing the Wu busted out, and I've always loved that confessional from Wu and Kageyan.
Yeah.
I thought it was one of my favorite. I grew up playing Sega. Sega Genesis was my thing. So seeing Sonic the Hedgehog get into Survivor was nice. And seeing it getting a callback was nice. Yeah. So.
JD says he quotes Wu all the time. What are the iconic Wu? I mean, there's the Sonic the Hedgehog, and then there's when he in the auction when he gets the ribs, he's like barbecue sauce,
fat tip of that guac,
melted. Like I forget exactly what he says, but I feel like
he says with Jeffra, she gets the guac, I think, and he's like, oh, let me get a fat tip of that guac,
fat tip of that guac. Yeah.
I know he's got the scene in the rain where he's all excited in the first few episodes. This is what Survivor's all about, baby.
Woo!
He's like jumping up and down. Yeah. Woo! I, for me, it's like his blindside face. I think it's one of the greatest blindside faces.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly the greatest impression you want to have on Survivor, but it's a good one. It's a memorable one. Is his shocked face. A lot of that.
I know who you are. You're Cliff Robinson.
Yeah, he had that confessional. I would love to pull it up. Where he's like just shooting hoops with my role model growing up, something like that.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of the surfer bro archetype. I find them endlessly, oftentimes entertaining with Fabio, with Wu.
I mean,
JD is sort of cut from that
for years with Angie Kontz, who did a lot of great work with establishing like the different character archetypes for Survivor. That was the one that always like if there was the surfer guy, and it's really like, you know, sort of flipped on Big Brother, but on Survivor, like that's the guy who you always could pencil in is going to do well because they have sort of like that athletic build, but also like sort of like the unassuming personality where that's like very likable that people are not ever going to be worried about. Oh, this is a strategist that we have to worry about.
Yeah, I always say like one of the greatest things you can, I think for me as an armchair analyst, one of the greatest things I would imagine is to be underestimated in the game, to have the ability to be better than everyone thinks you are, and then to do that, and then to do it successfully, and also be able to explain that. That's the one caveat with some of the surfer bros is I don't know how much Wu could explain any of the intentions that he had getting into that final two. So that's the hiccup, or even Fabio to some extent. He got lucky a little and how everything shook out. So I worry for JD. I think he's got more brains, in my opinion, from what I've seen, even though he's messed up with the whole idol clue thing and burned some trust here. And maybe I'm overestimating him, but I would like to see like JD go far. I think he's one of the players that I will be very sad when he goes, even though I know some people are frustrated by his sloppy gameplay. He's one of the players who I'm hoping goes the distance for sure.
We'll be right back talking Survivor with Peridium here on Rob as a Podcast. But first, let's thank a sponsor, and those are our friends over at Theragun, makers of the Theragun Gen 4. Look, we all have a lot of stress in our daily lives that weighs our body down. Whether you're an elite athlete, one of 608 U.S. survivors like myself, or if you're somebody who's just trying to make it through the day tension-free, Theragun can help. Theragun is the handheld percussive therapy device that is going to release your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power. And it's as quiet as the electric toothbrush that you might use. The Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good. It gets to the source of the pain by releasing tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. Whether you want to treat muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just the stresses of everyday life, there's no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. It's got an OLED screen and design that makes you feel like you're holding something from the future. Just go to their site and check it out. The Theragun app is going to learn from your behaviors and suggest guided routines. I love having the Theragun because it's something that if you end up, oh, I slept the wrong way, or like my neck hurts because I've been on TikTok for the last 3 hours, the Theragun can help with that. Or if you are doing something more active where you have tight muscles from working out, where the first lady of podcasting tends to get more of that, it's great for hitting all sorts of muscle groups that can get tight and prevent you from getting back into the gym sooner. The Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid and elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, hundreds of thousands of customers, and me. Try Theragun for 30 days starting at only $199. Go to therabody.com/RHAP right now to get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's therabody.com/RHAP, therabody.com/RHAP. Now let's get back to Peridium. Let me get into some strategy talk with you. This is a question from Webb. It says, hey, Robin Peridium, I hope I'm sneaking this in under the wire. 2 weeks in a row, we've watched two of the season's most featured players, Evie and Shan, aim for allies who thoroughly trusted them at Tribal. Both Xander and Brad had extra advantages, yes, but as Steven discussed recently, isn't it better to keep those guys around since they're telling you everything? Why spare looser cannons like Tiffany and JD, who will probably prove to be really difficult to work with slash corral for the rest of the game? Shan and Evie both seem very smart about the game, so clearly there's something else going on. What am I not understanding about their strategy? You know, I haven't really compared the two scenarios from the last 2 weeks, but I think that there's some interesting parallels where you had, you know, Shan and Evie, they're both painted on the show as sort of like the decision maker in terms of how that's going to go. They both have like one person that they're considering who is sort of like loaded up. They've got like a bunch of advantages. There's
like
also
a pinata,
yeah,
loaded with candy.
And then we also have the person who's sort of like the squeaky wheel, JD in the case of the Uwa tribe, and then Tiffany in the case of the Yasa tribe, and then the trusted ally, where Ricard is sort of the person that's the number one of the decision maker, Ricard for Shan, and then Liana for Evie, and then sort of like the innocent bystander, who I think that Voce was getting voted out last week would have been like if Jeannie was the person who got voted out this week.
I agree. Yeah, actually, I made a tweet about that after the episode. I was thinking about it more. I said, like, Uwa had Brad outnumbered dead to rights, and then they flushed his extra vote, his idol, one fell swoop. Whereas last week, we saw the opposite, where Yase had Xander dead to rights, outnumbered, and then they didn't do that. They didn't pull that trigger. And we actually saw Liana talk about that at the beginning of the episode, how she regretted that.
Yeah.
And so I've seen a lot of game discussion in the past week about, was that the right call for Yase to make? And then is this the right call for Uwa to be making? Because this is what I think a lot of people really are hoping that they would have voted out Xander, not Voce last week because of all this. And now they did it this week with Brad. But now people are like, well, actually, I don't know. Like there's a...
Wait, hold on. You were saying that that people are, being hypocritical on the internet? Mean,
look, there's a lot of people out there, fans of Survivor. And, some people got one opinion, some got the other.
Yeah.
But yes, there's a time where all of a sudden it does start to all coagulate into a giant question mark of who knows, you know, it is what it is.
What do you think? Which tribe do you think handled that situation better?
I'm going to say Uwa, but yeah, with Shan and Ricard.
Mm-hmm.
Although, to be fair, I don't know for sure, because Yase, it seems like from what I've seen in episode 3, I don't know where Xander's head is at the moment, but it seems like he's not that burned. I actually think he seemed to be in on the Voce thing going a little bit based on the reactions a little. I also do wonder if Jeannie is now, she seemed very blindsided a little bit by the vote of Brad. So that might potentially be a problem with a number going forward for the rest of the Green Tribe.
Yeah, this is
if
so
they were
interesting
to merge or something.
Comparing those two tribes, because I said this last week in one of the podcasts where I feel like that the Yasa tribe really did catch a break, and I don't know if this was like intentional, if anybody was thinking this way, of because Xander lost his vote, he did not have to write down somebody's name. So maybe maybe Evie said, like, hey, it's going to be Voce. Sorry, there's nothing we can do tonight. So maybe he wasn't blindsided, but he didn't have to, he didn't have to make that decision of like, oh, Voce is, is my friend. It sucks to write his name down. All right, let me just write down Tiffany's name, where then they go back to camp and Tiffany's like, what's going on, Xander? You wrote my name down? What's up with that? Where Jeannie, who, she's already written Ricard's name down once. And then did she vote for she voted for JD this time. So now
she did.
Jeannie. So they're both tribes are four people. But I feel like that the Yasa four is much more of a tight unit than the Uwa is like a 3+1.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. It made me reconsider when I said initially Uwa was like, actually, I do think Xander's in a better, socially, they seem a little bit tighter, the four of them. Maybe Tiffany is a little bit questionable at times, with she's her own rogue squeaky wheel. But ultimately, it does seem like at the very least, Xander is with them, and they could easily vote out Tiffany potentially and keep Xander, knowing there's nothing he could do if they went to tribal again with three people.
Right.
And he's also seems to be very close to the shot caller, who's Evie. It seems like those are the closer people. Whereas you have somebody like Jeannie, I don't think she's that close to Shan at the moment, who's calling that shot. So yeah, maybe this was actually better for Yase, which is interesting because the discourse that I've been living through for the last week and a half has been opposite of that, where I think more people are forgiving of Shan and the Uwa Green call to take out Brad, even though they miss Brad. Or, it's sad that he had to go. Whereas a lot of people were like, Tiffany should have been the one to go. That was the worst call to make. Voce should still be in the game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think there's, it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah. I just think it's really interesting. It's sort of like this like new paradigm of this week's episode sort of like helped give some clarity to what happened last week. Because now if Uwa goes to a tribal council this week, you got to think Genie is going to play the shot in the dark die where if like, let's say Xander even could vote, like you don't think like automatically, like I think that Evie and Liana could like potentially dupe both Xander and Tiffany and make them both feel safe where neither of them ends up playing the shot in the dark die. So I think that that's also, you know, another thing for like advantage for where Yasa is at.
Although maybe we're underestimating Shan's capabilities. She seems to be pretty dang good from what I've heard with these people in the relationships. Mm-hmm. I don't know how Genie feels a ton. We don't seem to know. I know she caught the clam. I don't know what that means for her relationship with Shan.
Yeah.
Now that she's been blindsided, maybe she'll go and hoard the clams for herself and leave Shan clamless. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's possible they could bring Genie back into the fold a little bit more, maybe convince her, I've got this extra vote from JD. He doesn't have it anymore. I think, I don't know for sure if we know, but she could maybe hold on. Is she allowed to keep that? Is that hers technically now, or is that JD's still?
I don't know if she'll give it back to him or not. Like,
does she have to? Like, is it like a Sarah and Cerise situation?
I get the sense that she intends to give it back to him. Like, okay. I feel like that he did not like will it to her. He like said like you can hold it. Like, I feel like that there's like a little bit of
as opposed
like,
to like you can have it.
Yes.
You can't. I'm not giving this to you. This is yours now. It's like you can hold it temporarily while I'm out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll see. Now, if he's still in the game and says like I want it back, and she like I would think, it's different if like if JD is out of the game, if he got voted out and he was holding, I think that she would be able to use it. But it's one of these things where, you know, we really do need that kind of like if you were out there, you were hey, can I talk to one of the producers? And they would say like, we'll get back to you on that.
Yeah. And you definitely think that if, say, next week, Shan should give that back if he wants it back. Do you think that's the right call
to
make for sure?
I think she should hold on to it for as long as she can until it becomes okay. A thing. Like
until it becomes a problem.
Yeah, yeah. I think so, because he doesn't have the advantage. So she should hold on to it.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, I wonder if that idol will be rehidden now that Brad's out. I feel like it probably would, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, Xander's.
Well,
really
I don't know. You think they're going to rehide the Beware advantage?
I think they would need to, just because, I mean, maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but I feel like if the Blue Tribe found it, they're screwed because there's no third idol to activate, and they seems to have to happen, has to happen at the exact same time.
Yeah.
You know, they all got to put their hands in at the same time for summon Captain Planet. They can't, do it individually. Yeah. So it looks like they have to. Otherwise, Xander's really in deep doo doo. And then whoever finds it on the Blue Tribe is also not getting in. And I'm like, do they not? They definitely would like idols still, I think. I'm appreciating the fact that we don't have to. I mean, we got different scenes finding other stuff, but I'm also like, it's interesting not having an idol play now for four straight tribal councils. That's a new
we're
era.
All in on the extra votes so far this season, as opposed
and also
to
none the of the advantages have actually been played. That's another fascinating thing. Mm-hmm. No shots in the dark, no extra votes, no vote steals, no idols. For all of the talk of the advantages and the search for the parchments and the papers falling out of people's pants, there's nothing. It's just a straight 3-1, 3-2, 4-1, 4-5-1 votes. It feels like it could have happened regardless of the fact that like Xander could have voted or Brad could have voted, you know?
So that's why I feel like that they don't want you to even worry about that stuff. It's like it doesn't really matter so much. I mean, I guess at some point it might matter. But, you know, I feel like that, you know, don't get too caught in the weeds in terms of like at least from Survivor's perspective of like on this stuff. Just focus on like these people in the show and, you know, why they're here. But I wanted to, speaking of character stuff, I wanted to ask you about Liana, and I felt like that I haven't seen this talked about too much. And the episode begins with Liana. And I caught this when I was rewatching the episode this morning. So the episode begins on Liana, and Liana is having regret about, we didn't vote out Xander last time. And then also, she says that, I feel like I just made $1 million mistake. The name of the episode, also, million dollar mistake. Like, if that feels like a very like benign quote that was in the episode. Interesting that, you know, that's what they chose to be the title of the episode. Usually I feel like that the Survivor episode titles are something like with a little bit more like of a significance and not something that's like super generic, like, you know, the $1 million mistake. Do you think that is there any significance to the both the episode starting with Liana and then having the title of like, I don't want to get into like edgic, but sure. I do feel like that in terms of like Liana's story, it's almost like that her story is a little bit of like that she's really having a lot of regret. And it seems like that, you know, it's significant for us to, you know, get that story. And then on top of that, also, she's talking about her mistake. And then kind of like Michaela in Survivor Game Changers, when she misses the legacy advantage because she's upset about not getting picked in the challenge, we also get it highlighted of like, oh, Liana missed the beware. Not that the beware advantage was that great. but, you know, she had she missed an advantage that was right under her nose.
Liana had this mea culpa of recognizing her biggest flaw, and then it tapped into the actual scene of her missing another, potentially slipping right through her fingers once again. Maybe that's going to be a recurring theme for Liana if that becomes a bit of her storyline going forward. I'm always interested to get a reaction of the previous episode and the vote out and like how the players digest it once they get back to camp. We don't always get that with some of the tribes, but seeing Liana have that moment talking about, I did like how she ended it at the beginning talking, although I don't know for sure, because we got two moments. We had the night and then the next day. And the first thing in the night she says is, she relates it to, I think she talks about her dad and what her dad told her.
Yeah.
And she said that change is the only thing that's constant in this world. And I wonder if that was sort of a bit of a theme, or whatever you want to say, a motif for this season, where things are changing. That's the only constant is the fact that nothing is constant.
It's a new era.
As Brad would tell us, with the whitest teeth ever. That's crazy. He must eat no sugar or something. I aspire to have
only
that bright teeth.
Eat broccoli.
I would, yeah. Broccoli's not too bad. My wife randomly told me yesterday her least favorite vegetable was green beans. I just thought about that now that we're thinking about broccoli so much. Broccoli's gotten up in my, anyway.
Do green beans. Do they look like anything in particular?
I don't think so.
Look like Kermit the Frog's fingers when you think about it.
I haven't thought about that. That's that might disturb me a little. But Liana did say, you know, change is the only thing that's constant, and there's always an opportunity to flip the narrative. And I thought, interesting. I wonder if that might happen. Maybe the narrative will get flipped. Maybe it means for her, maybe for the Yellow Yasse tribe. Or maybe it just means she's going to miss the beware advantage, which, by the way, I saw that pop up at the tribe at the beginning of the episode. I thought, and my sister validated that, we thought that was just Xander's sitting by the fire. I didn't realize that there was a whole nother advantage. So when that was showing, there was like, oh, look, they're showing Xander's beware advantage. All of a sudden, it's a totally new one. That really caught me off guard. I didn't realize that would be so... just thrown in front of everyone. I saw Chrissy tweeted about how now you see the whole dig here right at the beach for Ben's idol in the finale of HHH. She's like, yeah, they just put it right in front of you, kind of like just right in front of you. Like it suddenly starts to, I don't know. It made me laugh seeing Chrissy talk about that, but
She was making a joke, or she was
I think she was making a joke, pointing out like, you know, they'll put advantages right in front of your face sometimes. It doesn't have to be hidden in a tree where you need like to build a giant ladder, like tied it in Koh Rong or something and like scrape your knees to get to it. Sometimes it's just right in front of your face and you just need to dig there. Or in that case, it's right by the fire pit. Slips right through her fingers.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what this means for Liana. I've been sitting down for my next video coming up, trying to look into who I think is really going to win this season. And I do have a large incorporation of the editing, and I don't really talk about it very often. I've actually avoided talking about it on my channel in 4 years, even though it's one of the initial ideas I had for a video. And I'm not going to get into the weeds of it. I did actually have a stream a couple weeks ago where I had a whole 15-point power presentation to my audience explaining how I understand the editing and looking for it in that regard.
When you say how you understand the editing, you're talking about for like how they do a winner's edit?
How they, not even the winner's edit, just understanding scene by scene what it means for every player in the moment.
Yeah.
And what they choose to show to us, what they say, how it's intended to give off an impression to the audience. And like, ultimately, when we look at the big picture, how does it look for, in the, comparing it to the history of the show, previous seasons, what have we seen? What is the pattern to look for? And then I give my thoughts and I say, like, here's the person I think is currently looking to be edited the best and what that might mean. I'm not always right. A lot of the times I've been completely, I mean, Adam Klein, I did not see coming from a mile away. And I would honestly say on some level, I started my YouTube channel. I used to have an editing blog where I talked about the editing and I love to dive into it. And I had a blog about it and I created my own website even with like panels and stuff. And I ran it for a couple of seasons. And then when Adam's win showed up and I just was so off the mark on it, I thought David was going to win or Ken.
Yeah.
I just sort of shut the whole thing down because I just said like, this is too much time and I'm clearly going in the wrong direction. I'm not getting enough hits. And partially because of Adam Klein winning and me being so blindsided by it, it led to me eventually starting my YouTube channel. I went in a different direction because of it. So,
wow.
As far as, yeah, that's a little like origin story.
Yeah. Well, first off, that I would say that wasn't that an amazing outcome that happened that way? Because that I feel like that the whole fun of something like this is that you could have so much information like and be wrong. And I feel like that, like, you know, there's almost like what sort of like, you know, fun is it like, you know, that, like, okay, this, we're following this. I'm telling you, it's going to be this, it's going to be this. And then you're right. And it's like, okay, yeah, you were right. Okay, good job. But to me, I feel like that it's, I love being wrong on the, it doesn't feel great in real life. But like,
I kind of hope to be wrong, to be honest.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yeah. Cause I feel like it makes the whole thing so much more fun. And then, you know, especially then to have that be the origin story for like the, you know, amazing work you've done since then. And, you know, like I have to give Adam Klein a little bit of the credit, too, of like, you know, everything that he's brought to the Survivor world. So that's a great story.
It was for me, like I became the first season I got into hardcore was Heroes Villains as it was airing live. As you know, I was watching your podcast, listening to your podcast from the very beginning. I was very much rooting for Parvati, and I was told by people who followed the edit, you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
And I was very confused as a newbie who didn't understand the show. And then I got into it and I figured out the finale. Okay. Parvati isn't winning, but I still thought she only needs two more votes from the jury.
Yeah.
She's this close. And it just didn't come up. It was Sandra. And I thought, okay, interesting. And that really gripped me. This idea of like pulling the wool over your eyes and seeing the show from a different paradigm, like a paradigm shift or a Peridium shift, as I jokingly thought, brainstorming ideas for a segment of my stream to talk about the editing and what I like about it as somebody who sits around and edits Survivor content, cuts up the edited content for my own edited 15-minute versions of these abbreviated episodes every week on my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Getting it wrong with Adam like changed the trajectory of how I decided to create content about the show. And then for Survivor 41 now, like I do sort of look into it. Partially, I look into like the game and I read the background. I listen to your exit interviews. I listen to like, I read the exit press from other journalists to see what's really happening and how do I feel about these players. But I'm ultimately like, for my next video, I'm trying to figure out who do you think is going to win this season? And like looking at Liana, for example, in this opening intro, makes me questionable. I do like her. I think she's doing a great job. And then I sort of worry though, because I'm like, okay, is this initial scene showing us like, is this $1 million mistake? If she wins this season, if she doesn't win this season, is this like that $1 million mistake that maybe this isn't $1 million mistake? Because like, what did she really lose? She didn't get to go on a nighttime boat trip with Broccoli Brad. You know, was that the
extra vote? Yeah.
She could have got the steal a vote, I guess. And like that maybe would have been the $1 million mistake. But, you know, I'm like, you know, I don't think she missed out too much at the end of the day. So,
yeah. And just to go back to your miss on Adam Klein winning season 33. Don't forget that, you know, the season that came right before that was Korong. And that was the season that, you know, really, I think the editors got dragged of that. It was like, oh, Michelle was going to win. Like, that was just everywhere. Michelle was going to win. Winner edit Michelle. And maybe because of that, you know, you were sort of like relying on like old information of the way that they were editing the show. And that was pointing you in a direction. So it wasn't necessarily that you were doing anything wrong, but based like they just changed up the like the exercise and you had not seen that in practice yet.
I say like, you know, the edit is a science at the end of the day. And I try to remove my bias as best as I can. Also from watching the show in general, just even as like, even casually when I first turn it on at 8 p.m., I try to watch it without being super critical. If I can just enjoy the ride, as you said, get in the boat, enjoy the ride and see how I feel at the end of it. And then I'll dive into the weeds after in my own time. But yeah, you know, I for like Korong, I did see Michelle winning for most of the season. I didn't think Aubrey stood a chance at all. So when she won, I was not surprised, but I was also like, you know, interested to see the reaction because there was a huge contingent of, and I remember watching you wanting to avoid that because it was a bit of a dicey situation. Edgic was
I don't like to talk about it because I feel like that
I know that's always
like,
your thing.
It kind of ruins the show. But I do think that the only good that I feel like comes out of it is that then, you know, if like that word gets out to like, and I don't know how many production people listen to the podcast.
I don't think they care. I saw Mike Bloom did an interview with the editors a couple of years ago and they talked about the winner's edit and the editing. And I've saved that article for a while because it explained how the editing team works behind the scenes. And they said they kind of laugh it off. Like they don't put any time or effort into understanding it. Or I'm like, I guess we're trying to understand their behavior. Like we're watching them. Like it's like they're in a cage and we're trying to observe them from like as scientists, but ultimately it's really not like that. I think they don't care. They're just trying to put together a fun TV show that we can enjoy and look back on and you know, have a good time. Yeah.
If you talk to an editor, I think they would say there's no such thing as a winner edit. Like that's
they would say that. They have said it. Yeah. I have a quote. Like they actually straight up say like, there's no such thing as that. We don't take that into consideration at all. Like they're just trying to put together the best show they can. And maybe there's a science to what they do. So maybe that's what we're looking for.
Okay.
But yeah, getting it wrong there, changed the trajectory of it. And I will say again, like it's for me, I like to be right for posterity's sake to go back to and say, hey, by the way, you can take me what I have to say because I'm this thought leader or whatever. And I know what I'm talking about because I have a resume that has all these like I got all these ones right. But ultimately, like it's remembering that I got it so wrong for so many times being blindsided. I legitimately thought Wu was going to beat Tony and Kagyan. And I walked into that final tribal and Tony didn't have the best final tribal. Mm-hmm. And I still, even rewatching it, and I made a video about this not too long ago, I still think Tony had one of the worst final tribals in Kagyan personally. He wasn't great, very defensive. And I walked into that finale and I thought, into that reunion thinking, Wu is going to beat Tony. I cannot believe it. And I was so blindsided. And I'm like this survivor expert who didn't even see that. And I still hear about it to this day from the comment section. But that to me is really what I'm like. That's me and Wu saying like, this is what Survivor is all about. Like being wrong is honestly more enjoyable than being right most of the time because I live like that blind side of not seeing it coming despite thinking you know everything, despite feeling like you've spent all this time diving into it. That to me is worth its weight in whatever comments I'm going to get on YouTube for being wrong about my predictions or whatever. Which, by the way, I'm like possibly predicting Liana might win this season. She might be in my top four.
Yeah.
Coming out this Wednesday. That's my next video. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I think you have to love being wrong to do this kind of
stuff. Oh, you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would almost honestly prefer it. I'd rather be more blindsided than get it right. But if I had to pick one or the other, I'd rather be wrong, more wrong than right at the end, to enjoy the show. It's nice to be right, but yeah. I ask my wife at the end of every episode, I say like, who do you think's going home? If I gave you some money, like I say, if I gave you $5, who would you put it on? What's your gut? And she's really bad at making a pick. She's horrible at it, but like she did say, I think Brad's going and I thought JD was going to go. I said, I think JD's going.
Yeah.
And I'm like watching it, experiencing the episode, and I'm like, JD's really sloppy. Like, what's, if I was Shan, I'd probably vote out JD here and keep his extra vote in my pocket and know you got Brad. He views you as your number one. He's got this idol that is currently hampering his game, and he's got the steal a vote, and like, he's your number one, and you're clearly not going next either way. So maybe Genie goes, maybe Ricard goes, but he's a shield. He's a boisterous character. Like, maybe it's actually better to keep him around.
Yeah.
But I was dead wrong, and she didn't do that. And I was living for it because I love JD. So.
Yeah, I love JD too. I was very sad to see either of them go. Last week, I feel like sad. I was really crossed up. I didn't think Voce was going to go. I thought Tiffany was going to be the person to go out. So I was very surprised when it came up Voce.
I think I'm on the same boat. I'm trying to remember. I think I thought Tiffany might have gone too. Mm-hmm. Voce was barely talked about as a boot. It really was like Xander, Xander, Xander.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the last second, Tiffany is like, Voce, and then they're like, maybe we do Tiffany.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that might be it. That might be where the story's been going all episode, but nope.
Here, I want to get back to some of the voicemails. I got a good one from Kevin that I want to play for you. Okay, here is Kevin with a question about something that Kevin has noticed at Tribal Council this season.
Hey, Rob, it's Kevin from Los Angeles. I just realized that right before Jeff reads the votes, he says, if you have an idol or an advantage and you wish to play it, now would be the time to do so. What possible advantage besides an idol can you play after the votes, but before they're read? Love to hear what you think.
Yeah. Forget the come on in, guys. I think that this is the Jeff expression that we should examine the real change here, too. I noticed that myself, and I wish I would have pulled the clip. But okay, now's the time to play it. Idol or advantage, does that speak to that there could be an advantage we see in this season that gets played in this spot?
Yeah, I think there has to be then. Well, he didn't do that for Winners at War, did he?
No.
I don't think so.
And we haven't, I don't think have ever seen anything that, I mean, maybe it could be sort of like the...
Nullifier? Idol nullifier, maybe?
I think you'd play the idol nullifier.
You play it after the...
I mean, you put it in the urn, the idol nullifier.
You're right.
Like, I was thinking about, like, the Jeremy safety without power, but that was, like, that would be awkward where, you know, maybe they might change up where you play that, but Jeremy played that before the vote.
Before he voted,
like, what if the votes come up all Jeremy's? Like, well, all right, it really, we get to Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where it's like, Bueller, like, he's not here. So, all right, I guess we have to vote somebody else out because you voted for somebody who's not at Tribal Council.
Yeah, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I didn't put too much stock into it just because I know the extra vote you play, you don't play it at that point. You don't play the steal a vote at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You don't play idols, obviously. He says idols. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's like, what advantage? There certainly hasn't been an advantage thus far that he would... that anyone would be able to play at that point, but he's still saying it.
Yeah,
it's not the shot in the dark at all. So what is causing him to want to say something like that? I don't know. I'm like looking it up now. Like, what advantages have they ever played at that point?
I have not tracked to see if Jeff has said that at every Tribal Council so far this season. So perhaps, I mean,
I think
weird.
I think he has. Yeah. All
so,
four.
Yeah. So it's not just like, oh, a slip of the tongue of just something new that he's like throwing out there. Like, it seems like that there has to be some intention behind him adding that now is also the time to play advantage.
Is it like the 50-50 coin? Maybe that was one that played at that point with Michelle last season. She played that right before they revealed the votes. I think.
I guess so. Yeah.
I would say that's technically an idol, but it's just called a coin instead.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Big Brother 23's coin of destiny is basically
a coup d'etat.
Yeah. Just a coup d'etat. Just rebranded. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm guessing he's just saying it because he knows it's going to become a thing in the future. That's an interesting little tidbit that I actually wasn't even thinking too hard on.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make me think, like, something's going to come up to where it's going to be played. It won't be an extra vote. It won't be a steal a vote. And it won't be an idol. It'll be something else.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
maybe it's something we've never seen before.
So do you think that all the advantages this season will also be beware advantages? Do you think that that is going to be basically something that is going to be baked into the whole season?
I mean, for three episodes, we've seen it like that. I guess going back to Liana's quote of change is the only thing that's constant. Maybe not. Maybe we'll see some other type come up, but I wouldn't be surprised if we get Beware advantages. If it's just like the thing that happens where Jeff is trying to say something along the lines of everything comes at a cost. It's not as simple anymore as just getting something good or getting something bad. Mm-hmm. It's actually a little bit of both. And like I remember when he released Ghost Island, the twist, and explained that. I had a whole video basically trying to figure out how that's going to work, because it wasn't very often in Survivor they have like pro and con of a straight up like idol. You get an idol, it's a great thing. There's no downside other than like the social ramifications.
Yeah.
And that's a huge part of it. That's a huge part of Survivor. But as far as getting an actual advantage, there's usually no disadvantage to it. And now it's like everything is almost baked in. You get the idol, but not really. So I think I could see the Beware advantage sticking maybe throughout the entire season. I have made calls and been wrong. I thought they would never redo Edge of Extinction after season 38. I remember saying that last time I spoke to you. I said one of my takes, I don't think they're going to bring it back. And
nobody thought they were going to bring it back.
I couldn't believe it after watching Chris, and I'm like, the reaction to Devin's losing, I was like, no way they're going to bring that back. But they did. And then, you know, I guess it worked out for the most part. What do you think? Do you think they're going to keep the Beware advantage around, or is it going to evolve or change?
I wonder if, you know, Jeff had said in the preseason that, hey, if you want something this season, you're going to have to risk something. You might be have to give up your vote. I do think that the advantages, at least the ones found at the camp, I think may all be Beware advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I would agree with you.
That's the new thing.
I could see it sticking around. Jeff is really leaning into this gamification of, it's not just you get it and now you're great and everything's honky-dory. It's you're going to have to think about it. And I think that's sort of like a lesson for the future of the show, in that like Jeff's direction isn't like, it's no longer you can just win idols all the way to the end. Now they're a lot more complicated. You have to start improvising and saying crazy things, or you have to do what they did in Winners at War, where you have to give your idol to another person. Ben can't win if those are the idols we see all the time.
Well, look at what happened to Tony. Tony got the, you know, extortion advantage in Winners at War, where there was like nothing good that came of that. And Tony had to like, oh my God, now I got extortion. And he had to like run around and, you know, and I think that, and that was probably the best episode of the whole season. So I think that Survivor, like, that's the kind of thing where, you know, we go back to, you know, that conversation that Mike White had with Jeff Probst, like, is it fun? It's like, yes. Okay. This is, we need more of this stuff.
Yeah. I was thinking that too. I was explaining the logic, cause my family were like, it's a little much. And I was like, well, apparently, Mike White showed up and was like, just asked a simple question. Is it fun? Are you guys having fun? Are you having fun? Are you, as the casual viewer base here who aren't going beyond the show, you're just tuning in at 8 PM. Are you having fun? And they're like, yeah, for the most part, we are. We're having a good time. So I'm like, okay, well, that's the point. Like, it was, did you guys have fun watching them count their fire tokens? And they were like, honestly, not really. Not a ton. Like, it's a little too, it's not flashy, I guess. Whereas the Beware advantage taps into that TV moment a little more for the show, you know? So yeah, is it fun?
Yeah.
I'd say for the most part, it's not too bad. I do think it's kind of feels like they're sort of got like, they only have 42 minutes. And I think I said that this is what I touched on at the top of the podcast, was that my one issue is with the identity crisis is that they kind of have 42 minutes to work with, and they have a jam packed with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's fun, but I almost wish that it was longer. I don't know. And again, my family were saying last night how they're like, The Bachelor gets like 2 hour episodes or something, or some show. Yeah. Bachelor in Paradise is like 2 hours twice a week.
I mean, all the Bachelor shows, I think, are
and they're like, 2 hours. Why don't they do that for Survivor, for a show that can pull in the ratings and has been going strong for so long? They clearly can do 2 hour episodes. They've done them, but they should do them more often. Maybe not more than once a week, but bring it. We've got a lot of content. We certainly are clamoring for more. I don't think 2 hours is a ton, and other shows clearly are able to do it. I don't know how The Bachelor does with this ratings, but or the other, like Big Brother does 3 hours a week. Why? And Survivor pulls in way better ratings. So I'm just like, you know, I don't know. I wish that I like the gamification and the twists. I do generally find it fun, but I do wish that there was a little more room in the box to put even more, like, I want to see Heather's dream mm-hmm. in the episode. Mm-hmm. I like that I can still see it. I would like to see more of that. Because I don't know anything about Heather, and maybe that's not going to become relevant.
Heather and Erica, maybe that's really part of it. Nothing so far through.
Oh, I feel so. I had Heather as my number two going in. I was so looking forward. She seemed like such a fun lady, a fun, neat lady. Based on the
look,
preseason.
Maybe we're going to see them down the road.
I think we will. I actually think my gut is Luvu is going next week to Tribal Council.
You know, think about Dean in season 39, where people I always see the people like they can't wait to jump in with purple. It was Dean is purple. He has no edit, and then you know he ends up in the final three.
And he actually had a pretty memorable edit. I still remember his goat army confessional.
Yeah.
That was great. So he's. He's still, first few episodes, it's not so much how you start. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. We still got a long way to go. I don't think they're in danger. I don't expect either of Heather or Erica to go, and I look forward, based on the secret scene, I look forward to what Heather has to give us.
I do
wish it was in the episode, or we had more time to explore it, but, you know, it is what it is. I don't want to ask for too much, I guess.
Pretty, and we were talking about Jeff's change up to the now's the time to play the idols or advantages. I think we got a little bit of one of Jeff's new catchphrases here this season. Did you follow the saga with Survivor Guy?
No.
Okay.
What is Survivor Guy?
Well, you are in for a treat. Okay. Jeff did an interview with Dalton Ross. We talked about it on the podcast. Mike and Leon talked about it. You know what I'm talking about?
Survivor Guy? I did see this. Yes.
Talked about Survivor Guy and how Survivor Guy gave him the inspiration to say all these different things. And Survivor Guy has given Jeff Probst a new phrase to try out this season. And we heard the first time it was ever uttered on Survivor this week. Here we go. Let's go back to Jeff taking the flint from the Uwa tribe.
All right, Uwa, tribal council tonight. Somebody will be voted out. Before you go, I need your flint.
I know it's not easy to give up. It's a penalty for losing. I'm sorry for you.
Sorry for you.
I'm sorry for you.
Yeah.
Sorry for you.
Is that the Survivor Guy coming
Survivor out? Guy gave Jeff a new catchphrase to try this season. Sorry for you.
I'm sorry for you. Okay.
Not I'm sorry for you. No, I'm.
Take sorry that. For you.
Sorry for you.
Yeah, I could see it. I did hear that. I remember I was rewatching that. I thought, oh, that sounds different. I don't really see Jeff saying sorry very often.
Sorry for you.
I guess is he sorry or like it's not like an
not
apology.
Really.
Like, sorry for you.
No, it doesn't sound like he's.
Like
yeah,
this is
like,
a very sorry situation for you, not
right. Like you know, sucks for you.
It sucks for you. Yeah,
sucks for
you. Although I guess you're trying to make it a family friendly show,
right? Sorry for you. he's it's an unfortunate event. You lose your flint. You lose your fire. I guess unless you're in a seer, you can make fire without it or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Yeah. It's a new thing. Maybe he'll bring in new stuff. It's a new era, as they say, and sorry for you could be a new phrase. Maybe we'll get something different going on. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Do you have a catchphrase, Pertium?
I do have repeated lines in my videos that I always go to, and it's actually an interesting, when I start writing, I write every video, I script everything.
Yeah.
So when I start out, I do get into like the usual, ladies and gents, internet, my name is Pertium, and I always... Initially, I go back to my old videos. I never said that. It just became like a very generic intro.
Yeah.
But the moment I write it out on my script, my brain just starts falling into place.
You have video guy.
Video guy. Yes. I could say that. And I end it with the same generic. I say like, I hope you guys enjoyed the video. Or I hope I actually got rid of the guys. I hope you enjoy the video. I hope you all enjoy the video. Yeah. I switch it up now. Microsoft Word highlighted it with the squiggly and said it's inclusivity. It's an interesting little thing.
I didn't know they had that. Clippy.
I didn't know it either until after the premiere episode.
Do
I was writing the script.
Do you think that Jeff scripts what he's going to say? And do you think that Clippy actually deserves the credit?
I think, I mean, Microsoft is a big company, maybe one way or the other. I don't know who came first.
Yeah.
But they came out and they said for inclusivity, it's better maybe to consider removing that. And I thought, wow. Interesting.
Wow.
So I did. I said, let's shake it up. It's a new era.
At like what I'm saying. Cause I, you know, it's like subconscious that you do all this stuff. And, you know, I realize that I do a lot of, hey, everybody, what's going on? I'm like, all right, everybody check.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to say like, thank you guys for watching. And now I'm like, maybe switch it up just to see what it feels like.
What are you going
to
go with?
I mean, a lot of times, I mean, I don't know if I pull up my latest script, even I can just, I have it up here. I don't even know if I thank my patrons, of course. Yep. And I usually give a little quick little wit, like for being my honorable mentions in a video where I don't have honorable mentions. Mm-hmm. I hope you enjoyed the video. And I always end it with the usual, I say like, and don't forget on your way out, kind of like how Jeff ends with like a something as they walk out of Tribal Council. I always give a quick little, so like in this case, sometimes I make it jokey or I make it more poignant. And I said like, it's not always about the destination, enjoy the journey too, sort of in the wake of the whole debacle with all the advantages this week. But then I end it with like, and I'll see you in the next one. And then that's where the joke comes in. And that's what, but I always say like, thank you guys. Don't forget on your way out, I'll see you in the next one. Once I do this thing, and that thing is the random joke.
Yeah.
So those are the catchphrases. I don't know if I call it a catchphrase.
Okay.
Ever recurring joke with like Nasir in my upcoming video, which I'm enjoying. And so it's going to go to him. He's going to jokingly take over the microphone at the very end. Not actually Nasir, but clips of Nasir is going to end. Yes. It's going to end on him. And he's sort of as a recurring joke throughout the video. And then, just starting off with ladies and gents, internet, my name is Pertium and welcome to blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And so that's it.
Can I give you, you don't have to use this. What if you ended the video of, and everybody, if you didn't like this episode,
sorry for you.
Yeah.
I could do that. Now that you pointed it out to me, I'll add that in at the last second. Say something like that, you know, like I'll say it if I'm being sarcastically apologetic, you know, like,
sorry for you.
Yeah. If you're not enjoying the season, sorry for you.
Sorry for you.
I don't know what to say about you. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. It's unfortunate.
That's your problem. Sorry for you.
Right. I mean, and I did agree with your sentiment. Like if they don't care for anything that happens on the show, and that's going to cause you to quit watching the show, well, it was nice knowing you, I guess. Like, if that's going to be it for you, then it is what it is. But, there's a lot of good content in this season to dive into. And I think that I'm still here for the ride.
Okay. Let me give you a couple of more things. The great Megan the Librarian called in with a voicemail. Let me see what you think about this one.
Hey, Robin Peridium. This is Megan the Librarian calling. As a big supporter of print media, I was very intrigued by Jeff's reference to the Survivor newspaper this week. Since you're both experts on Survivor history, I was wondering if you could go back and write headlines for some past issues of the Survivor Times or the Daily Survivor or whatever we want to call it. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you, Megan. So Jeff talked about the Survivor newspaper.
So, JD, if there was a Survivor newspaper, which one of the five of you is the face that represents Ula that got their ass kicked by Yasa? Oh,
first off, the headline is Ula got their ass kicked by Yasa. Like, again, isn't this a family show? Are we the game within the game? Or like, whose ass got kicked? Like, pick a lane. That's all I'm saying. Sorry for you. Okay.
It's going to be a slow evolution for Jeff or a quick evolution.
Right. That's fine. Like, honestly, I don't care. Like,
I don't care.
Like, pick a gear. Are we Mr. Rogers or are we like Stone Cold Steve Austin?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're the monster. I don't know. I have no idea where we're going with it.
Okay. So, Peridium, first off, would you subscribe to the Survivor newspaper?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
I'll take whatever. Sure. Okay. I got my master's in broadcast journalism.
Yeah.
And I
also wrote for the high school newspaper.
That's awesome.
So I know a thing or two about, you know, newspapers.
You wrote some headlines.
So Peridium, I was wondering.
Any ass kicking headlines?
No. Not that I can recall. Maybe the Wanta High School football team getting their ass kicked. We might have wrote about. Yes. So Do you want to throw out maybe some Survivor noteworthy events and we can brainstorm the Survivor newspaper? What's the name of the Survivor newspaper?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you could start basic and then go from there. Start with just the Survivor Times.
What about the Survivor Parchment?
That's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How does paper relate? What paper is on the show? Parchment is like the most iconic looking. Yeah. The something to do with pens and paper or something like that. Putting pen to parchment. Yeah. I think Survivor, the that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Do we need Survivor in the title? Would it just be the Parchment?
No, you don't need Survivor.
Okay.
I think we could get rid of that.
Is this the Daily Parchment?
The Daily Tree Mail. Yeah, you could do that. Yeah,
okay, so you get it delivered into your tree mail every morning. All right, so
Jeff comes by with his bag, his little scene of the camera.
Extra, read all about it.
Just chucks it in from the side, lands in your fire.
I think it's Survivor Challenge, like Paperboy Challenge, where you have to throw your Survivor, the Daily Parchment into a mailbox.
My brothers-in-law growing up they delivered papers, and they one day were getting so lazy they just couldn't be bothered. They ended up taking the parchment, and they were young. They were like 14 or 15. They took the parchment and they threw it onto people's roofs. They threw their mail on the roof instead, the newspaper bundle, because they didn't want to drive around. So they threw it all onto one person's roof. And then they got caught, and it was, my wife retells the story because it was the most angry her dad has ever been in his life.
Sorry for you.
And, just imagining Jeff Probst chucking that into everyone's tribe.
Do you ever play that video game Paperboy?
A long time ago.
Not a very fun.
No, it's old, very old, but yeah.
Okay. All right. Give me a couple of events and let's see.
Well, I just thought of JD, and I was thinking about him doing the whole flip. He's trying to do this trick style shots in the immunity challenge, and something to do with JD, like goes for the trick shot but comes up short or something along those lines. Because he was trying for the style points to look cool while also.
How about this? And I come flailing. From New York, where we have like the New York Post and the Daily News, and there's like tabloids, and you have like big headlines. So it's not like a fancy they do have the New York Times, but that's not what the Daily Parchment is not that. How about this? It's like it's like JD, he's trying to do the finger roll, and it says just don't, and like the J and the D are sort of like highlighted.
I love it. I wouldn't have thought of that, but that's great. Yeah, just
that's like
don't.
The kind of back page that they would have on like the Daily News.
Right. Honestly, I didn't grow up reading the newspaper, even though I majored in it. So I didn't really write too many headlines, but I would say, yeah, that's a good one. I'm thinking of something with Brad. We got to have something for Brad with the either him hunting in the brush or the dummy, the fake dummy, something like that, like something to do with the news of him being left behind in the dummy, but it's actually just a dummy.
What about Dummy and Dumber? Brad voted out of Survivor.
I like it.
Okay. Give me some historical ones.
A historical
famous
one would
moments.
Be JT giving up his letter.
Okay. Oh, JT.
JT writing the letter to Russell.
Okay.
And
JT
giving
sends
up an
the letter
idol.
To Russell. Okay.
yeah.
Let's see.
I mean, that kind of writes itself.
JT sends the letter. It's like P.S. JT is an idiot.
Something with XOXO.
Yeah.
X's and O's crosses out JT or something.
Yeah.
All the love in the world, something won't. Yeah. Not enough X's in it. I don't know. I'm thinking about Parvati's reaction and how it was like something to do with stabbing, ripping his heart out.
Yeah. Okay. All right. If the audience has a good one for that, these things, they don't just
that's an interesting,
come to you right away.
I would, that's a B&B thing. I'd love to have explored with Mike Liana.
Yeah. All right, one last one.
One last iconic moment. Something to do with, let's do go with Tony, I guess.
And yes. In
either he's speaking llama, maybe something to do with the llama one of Kagyan. With Cass yelling at Cass and you know, I don't know if something off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think
though.
You this should be like have like all like llama puns, like llama mia.
Yeah, that's a good one. What do you think? Do you have a moment in your head that's sticking out to you, like an iconic Survivor moment?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the big ones of like Eric Reichenbach giving the necklace away.
That's a good one.
How would that how would that be covered? Like, I mean, he's an ice cream scooper. Give up the necklace. Like, it'd be like jewelry heist. Like, the Black Widow Brigade steals the necklace from Eric, voted out of tribal council.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. Or I'm just thinking of somebody who's incorporating the word scoop into it.
Like yeah.
Ice cream scoops. No more to give or something
ice
like
cream
that.
Scoopers, one too many hopes melted.
Yeah. Something along those lines.
All right. Let me see. I have one other clip I wanted to play for you here today. JD had a very colorful analogy this week where he talked about just how bad things had gotten for him.
You know how people say when things go bad, you know, crap hit the fan. Today, it was like crap hit the fan and the fan was made of crap.
Pridium, this was a very graphic analogy that JD gave us. Can't even imagine a fan made of crap, right?
The picture in my mind isn't pretty. Mm-hmm. It wasn't pretty initially, but I've never imagined the analogy could be the... I feel like you've got a lot of problems if your fan is made of crap. I don't even know if the crap hitting the fan is that big of a deal.
I mean,
at that
who would notice at that point?
At that point, it's just, I'd like to know
like,
how
this
that's
is like
even
some
possible.
Sort of like jigsaw invention of a fan made of crap, JD.
Yeah. And if you turn that on, like, what's happening? I don't even know if that's a fan I'd ever want to
is this like the ultimate prank you could do to somebody of like if you really want to get somebody that I mean JD is 20 is he like in some like fraternity where they've done this stunt where they get them with the old crap fan where you walk in the room and then turn the switch on?
I feel like I've heard of that being a prank, not that I've done it, but like you put something on top of the fan when it turns on and then it just sort of ruins that person's day. I'm not sure though. Maybe that's where he was going with it, you know? take some of my bags of my cat's crap and put it on the fan. We'll see what happens.
Sorry for you.
Exactly. JD's analogies are interesting. He also brought up the crystal one at Tribal Council.
And yeah, what'd you make of that?
I was...
Everybody's crystals.
I was amused by that. I felt like that was a rough draft of an analogy. I wasn't sure where I was going with it. I thought... Mm-hmm. And then it became like, oh, we're talking about like physical.
Yeah.
Everyone's holding a crystal.
Yes.
Maybe that's the Sonic the Hedgehog thing, actually, now that I think about it. Because in Sonic the Hedgehog, you have to collect
crystal. Yeah.
The crystals in the game. So everyone's got their own precious crystal. And it's like, yeah, interesting. I don't know. I never viewed my loyalty as a crystallized so much.
Yeah.
So tangibly. But. I don't know.
You know, speaking of JD, let me play you one more voicemail for you. This is from Taylor.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Peridium. Taylor calling here. I wanted to know, Peridium, if JD had hit his layup shot on the challenge, would he have jumped up to number one all time in the Time Survivors Hack competitions list? That was amazing had it went in. Also, I wanted to see if you guys caught Survivor Man's new catchphrase at the end of the challenge.
Of course.
Who was Flint? Dropped in the old, sorry for you.
Yes.
I was really hoping for more, but that's about what I expected from it. Let me know your thoughts. Thank you.
Sorry for you.
Yeah. You don't think that would have made the list of all-time hack challenges, right?
You know, probably not. Maybe if we're getting to like the 20.0 at that point. Yeah. Maybe we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel, hard pressed, you know, for anything. It didn't work. He kind of is channeling, like, he kind of reminded me of Malcolm a little bit, his whole archetype of this whole. Right. And I like Malcolm too, but Malcolm was never actually great at that, at challenges. Mm-hmm. So it was actually kind of fitting that he did this. Malcolm is usually similar to, compared to Joe or whatever. But I'm like, Malcolm's never really been a challenge beast. And seeing JD try to
roll
do
a little bit in Philippines, like
he did it toward the end. Yeah. He had won a couple of clutch immunities at like the final five, maybe final six or something.
Yeah, I think, I think he might have won two immunities, but I think Scoopin ended up winning three.
Yeah, the whole shaky hands thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, when I saw that with JD, I thought that is such a JD thing. I live for it. But probably not. Didn't work out too well for him in the end. And it, if anything, it was highlighted to be the opposite of a good strategy. I think just keep it simple. You're just throwing beanbags on a platform in the air.
You know? Yeah. If they would have had Brad do it the whole time, they probably would have won that challenge.
Yeah. It was, I don't remember. It was a JD. Did Brad do it at all?
Came in at the end and he hit like, he came three, at the end and started doing it. Got them like pretty much like caught up. Peridium, is there anything else that you want to mention from your notes or anything else you're seeing?
I don't know. I think I'm enjoying the season a lot. I don't have too much more that we haven't already covered. You know, some growing pains with the new era. We're back at square one, I guess. And I'm curious going into this season what it was going to look like. I think that I'm enjoying it so far and I'm looking forward to where it goes next. I hope it keeps going for at least another 2.5 years so I can come back and talk to you again. I'm looking forward to it.
Whenever you want to come back. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
No, I was blindsided by you reaching out. I was excited to come on, of course. And then being able to play with the RHCP network, the crew, every weekend has been a highlight of my time since Survivor's been off the air. So I appreciate it. Thank you for having me here. I don't have anything else to talk about at the moment, but you know, if I ever have a burning passion, I will reach out again. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to voice my thoughts. Usually I contain it to 15 minutes about a random subject that nobody was thinking about.
Yeah.
And this is a 2 hours. So,
it's a lot. If anybody has not yet subscribe to Peridium's channel. I mean, if you're listening to a 2-hour podcast, you obviously love Survivor. What are you waiting for? It's free. Subscribe.
Yeah, right now.
Yeah. You'll be getting a nice Survivor video every week. I suppose a Big Brother video. So be sure to check that out. What's the easiest way for people to find your channel?
YouTube. As long as you have an idea. I mean, most of my videos usually show up toward the top, thankfully, because my name isn't really conventional. Mm-hmm. But, you know, type in Peridium, P-E-R-I-D-A-M on YouTube. You'll find it. Or Google, even. It's a pretty unique word.
Yeah.
I think Bear, the seed company, actually has a copyright on it, which isn't great. Mm-hmm. That's a bit of a weird thing
Seeds,
I found
baby.
Out. Seeds, baby. So there's that, but
what
I tend
kind of
to override
seed
them.
Is it a seed?
It's like a seed growth formula called Peridium. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was a thing. I don't really think that I'm competing with them too much in that category of products, but I did sort of take over the SEO in Google with my pretty thumbnail.
You might have to make some sponsored content.
Maybe I'll reach out to them, or maybe not. Yeah. Maybe I don't want to get them to know who I am. But anyway, I know. Just
today
go on
we're
YouTube.
Talking about the top 5 seeds of an idea.
Actually, yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. It's called the Russell seed.
Mm-hmm. I copyrighted that Peridium. My YouTube channel is taken out.
I talked to Russell for the first time a couple weeks ago, actually, and he was very, very nice, very flattering. He said some nice things. So,
very nice.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice. He was pretty nice to me. Maybe I would have voted for him. in the final too. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So,
thank you for joining us here today. Of course, we still have a lot to do here this week. If you missed any of the coverage on the BNB, YX Law, Survivor Global, the Survivor Stockwatch. You can get that all when you check out our podcast feeds for Survivor and reality TV wrap-ups. Go to robhasawebsite.com/survivorfeed for all of that. And then I will be back over the weekend. Rob and Akiva need a podcast. We'll be playing the reverse Family Feud. And Peridium, you'll like this. I'll be talking about Squid Game with Chappelle on the new Nothing But Netflix podcast. And we'll have a special guest with us, Josh Wigler, to talk about Squid Game with us. And of course, if you're a fan of Squid Game, of course, check out Peridium's video about the Survivor players who would do well in Squid Game. Was I in any consideration to do well in any of the Squid Games?
If I'm being honest, I think you could have been
dead
in consideration
very soon, right?
I did isolate
it. I wouldn't
it,
make
so,
it
like,
through the first game.
The red light, green light. I think you could do well at a couple of them, but some of them are very luck dependent. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought the marbles game might be up your alley, trying to figure out a way to finesse the marbles.
Was it an alley? Yeah.
In the alley, right?
Yeah. Maybe.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts on all this. I'm excited to hear Josh Wigler and Chappelle talk.
I think I could like nibble the cookie down to forget the needle. All right.
Right.
So, Peridium, thank you so much. Of course, thank you all for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work, but you know it's easy bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing too. You're busy enough. Go to geico.com and get a quote and see what you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.